Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Martin Hillenaar, internationally renowned ICT executive. Martin is a past CIO of the Central Dutch Government and past director of the Central Government IT Policy Department of Ministry of the Interior and Kingdom Relations. So, Martin, you just have a remarkable, outstanding career with many, many contributions having significant global impact. And we really appreciate you and thank you for coming in today to share so much of your expertise and wisdom with our audience.
Well, thank you very much, Stephen. I hope I can live up to the expectations.
Now, Martin, can you profile your work at the PBLQ and your top predictions for 2015 and beyond?
So you go right into the hard questions. Well, PBLQ is a Dutch consultancy office. It has been established by the Dutch government about 25 years ago, but it has gone private, I think, about 15 years ago. It works closely with government on strategic ICT matters. It's been there quite a while, and it's done some really neat stuff. So you can say that if there's something really important going on within Dutch government, then PBLQ will be involved in one way or another. Yeah, that's about it. Then you want to hear my predictions for 2015. Well, I think that a very important, let's say, change that I'm experiencing is that we don't have this gap between IT, ICT, and business anymore. I think that the way our clients look at it is that every top civil servant is really aware of the fact that he can't do without ICT anymore. And so that's really a big change, because until not even that long ago, ICT was something strange, technical, dangerous. So you would rather stay away from that. I think that's the biggest change we're going to witness the next couple of years.
Again, you do have this background of being a top executive and many years in that role, and so you're in this really perfect sort of position then to predict how executives can act on sort of the trends and the predictions that are happening for the future.
What I see is that. Well, there are different angles to that. You can look at it from the executives on the vendor side, for example. That's the guys who try to help government to reach their goals. I think that those parties, those vendors that don't invest in what's really going on within government, they're going to have a very hard time. On the other hand, what we see is that top civil servants need to get their hands on the important ICT matters. So what we did what we saw in Holland is that they even go to school for that. So there are small classes of top civil servants really trying to face challenges, really to get their hands on the main events in ICT. So two sides of the coin. On the one hand, people who try to make their business out of it, and on the other hand, the guys who are trying to buy the best stuff they can get.
Due to your global reputation, you were invited and then spoke at the IFIP World CIO Forum in November of 2014 in Xi'an, China, where more than 1,000 executives participated from over 50 countries. So using that as a bit of a context then, and you were there for the entire forum, what sessions did you find the most valuable, and what are the lessons from those sessions? The second question is, what really surprised you at this World CIO Forum? And then the host country had a number of presenters make predictions and talk about what's happening in terms of CIOs in the future. So what did you find that they said that you thought was quite noteworthy?
Well... That's a good question again. I was in China. It was the second time this year. I was at two big conferences. This one was even bigger than the first one. What I experienced was that it was a very intense conference. Literally, I mean, there were not a lot of pauses. I mean, there was not a lot of time to stretch your legs and to walk out of the room. I'm not trying to be critical, but it shows that there was so much to tell. There were so many stories, but if you looked at them very closely, you really saw that it was all the same story. Everybody talking about what's going on, what are the big changes, what do we witness. So if you make a pile of all the presentations that haven't been done, you have a lot of very rich knowledge about what's going on at the moment. But at the end of the day, I got the feeling that I got a complete update. At the same time, I experienced that everybody is talking about what's going on. So we are in a room full of witnesses looking at the world evolving around us, the technical world, the ICT world. And we draw our own conclusions, and these conclusions really look a lot alike. So we see technical possibilities move into our community, into our lives, in a very intensive way. But nobody talked about what does this mean? What are we going to do with this? What will the future look like, and what is our contribution going to be? It was all about possibilities, technical challenges, but not the challenges in terms of what's the effect on our society? What's it going to mean? And more importantly, what are we going to do with it?
So adding to those questions then, and what did you find were the most memorable moments from that week at the World CIO Forum? And then can you summarize some of the lessons and tips from your speech, which was very well received?
What I found very impressive was the setting. I mean, there were some really formal meetings, for example, with the governor of the province that was hosting us. There was this enormous building, these enormous meeting rooms. There was this, the way we interacted with each other. That really made a big impression on me, because it showed to me that although the world is getting very small, that there are completely different worlds trying to mingle, trying to get together. And the attempt of really trying to get together was what really impressed me on those 2 days. There's enormous potential in exchanging, and elaborating on what's going on. And it really inspired me. I came back to my own country with the feeling, whoa, there's so much more going on. How can we connect? How can we work together? And that's what I'm still puzzled about. So meeting you, for example, the other guests, made it clear that it's a small world on one side, it's a very big world on the other side, but there are huge opportunities in getting the right people together and try to make a difference, and not a difference on getting grip on all the opportunities, but getting grip on how should all these opportunities affect society, affect working together, affect building a world that I really want to live in and that my children want to live in.
So, and then I guess, you know, you described your experiences there, but then also you had this amazing speech that you gave with some really good tips that you provided to the audience. And I know that people were just so impressed by all the lessons that you shared. So can you get into some of those lessons?
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, maybe you hear from me that I'm really looking for ways to make a difference, and that's what I tried to do in all the opportunities I got in my working life until now. So I was the first appointed CAO in Dutch central government. So I really could start on a, let's say, on a zero base, because there was nothing. Nothing, of course, there was a lot of IT, but not a lot had been done in, let's say, the collaboration between the different departments. So this was my starting point. I tried to tear down the walls between the different stovepipes, between the different silos. And that was something that, well, people were really skeptical about. Can you do that? I mean, it's very difficult to work together within government, everybody told me. So I made an effort. And I think, although lots of things could have been done much better, I think we achieved a level of collaboration that really surprised everybody. And the main thing in that operation was sharing my responsibility. So what we did was we described our task. We described my task, the task of the central government CIO, and we broke up that responsibility in different tasks, and we appointed every CIO to do one of those tasks. So our meetings after we decided that, were completely different. Because from then on, everybody worked with the same starting point. That's the central government business case. It should add to something that was for government as a whole, and not just for the Ministry of Defense, or not just for the Ministry of Welfare. So that really changed everything. And we could set clear goals on those tasks, and we could talk about what's generic, what's for everybody, what's infrastructure, what can we share. And then it proved to be possible. We proved that it was possible to have a real breakthrough and forget about stovepipes. At the same time, we realized that it was very important to take care of the team, because over a period of 5 years, the team changes. People come, people go. And once you change one member of the team, the whole team changes. So we really invested in each other. So we had every 6 months, we went away for 2 days to have, of course, the formal meetings, but at the same time, we had discussions about opportunities, about difficulties, about issues, and thus we really had a very productive a period of time, and we showed the world that that it's possible to reach a high level of cooperation between different departments, and that was something that I never thought was a story on its own, but it proved to be a story by itself, just a story of the making of the collaboration of the Dutch CIOs. I can laugh about it now, but it was a very rewarding period, and of course it's always rewarding if you can reach the goals that you agreed on.
So Martin, I can just see the value of all the things that you've done as a CIO and how you were able to remove sort of the silos within the government to get everybody working on the same page. A lot of this was summarized in your really great presentation deck. Are you going to make that deck available?
Yes, of course. I'd love to. But I think I need to give you a little bit of background on the deck. Try to show is more or less in a metaphor what not working together means and what working together means. And I used the football metaphor because that's something that has always been very important for me. I started my career as a not very talented football player, but football always was a very important part in my modus operandi, in the way I tried to work. Because I realized that in a football team, you can't do it alone. You need the rest. And the guy who prevents goals from happening is as important as the guy who scores the goals. So as a team, we try to get everybody credits for his or her contribution. And football is the metaphor in my PowerPoint. What I did was show how we dealt with an operation that we called compact government in Holland. How can we make government smaller, more efficient, more effective? And what did IT contribute to that? So that was a way to explain what kind of specific things we did to get where we want to get, a more efficient, smaller, and effective government. So, to answer your question very briefly, I'm more than happy to share my PowerPoint.
Well, that's excellent. So when the interview is distributed, then perhaps we can attach a link to your PowerPoint. And I think that add is sort of an additional layer to this interview. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Now, Martin, can you describe your most significant and influential achievements and the practical outcomes seen today and forecasted into the future?
Okay. To be precise on that, I think that, of course, getting the system to work is very important. That the collaboration, shared responsibility, set clear goals. But I think that if you go one step further, then what we actually did was we worked on a, let's say, very robust information infrastructure. So we did things as bringing all the data sets together. When I started, we found 66 of them, and we brought them back to four. And those four, of course, they are interconnected. So we also did procurement on the networks. Not everybody by itself, but just we did it as a group. We made it possible for every civil servant to have a working environment, digital working environment that really is up to date and up to speed. So we have also a bring your own device policy. We did a lot of work on information security. We brought together a set of standards for that, rules and regulations that everybody needs to meet. We invested in the quality of our project management. We brought together the very best project managers to be independent from the market on crucial functions. So if we did really important projects, then we had our own people to do them. They, of course, could hire the expertise they need additionally. Let's see. We did an education for our top government, top civil servants, I mean. We found in the United Kingdom a very useful way of reviewing the big projects on a peer review basis, a four-day exercise with very big impact. We installed an IT dashboard to follow, to make it possible for the public to see what's happening in big ICT projects over the years, with all the formal documents attached to that, to get more transparency. Let's say these are a few things we did to make sure what collaboration can bring you.
You know, Martin, I can see why you were nominated for European CIO of the Year. Those are some remarkable and influential achievements. And I know that the CIOs in the audience will appreciate the value of all that you did. Now, in this next question, you are this remarkable leader. Can you share some of your leadership lessons that could be used by executives?
Well, I'm a little bit worried about, phrases like that, excellent leader. I was the football player. I was the captain of the team. Let's call it that. The achievements were made by the team. That's, to be honest, that was also what the jury wrote down in their report. That's what I was, nominated for, because I managed to get this team, very effective. And to make a team work, then you have to share responsibilities, like I told you before, like I mentioned before, and you make it sure that everybody gets the credits for success. And a very important thing is just be there, show up. I mean, 80% of success is just showing up. And I think that I managed to be there when it was needed, and at the same time, I managed to make the team work as a team, and everybody find their place in that team. And that's something I can point it out too. We had a little crisis in my period as well. In 2011, we had the DigiNotar crisis, we call it. A very dangerous situation, and you know, on information security, there was a hack in our certificates, and a lot of Dutch government websites were compromised. And what was more important, they were also there was a threat of being put on a blacklist of Microsoft, which would put a lot of Dutch government activities really on hold, which was a serious problem. I got a phone call Saturday morning at around 10 o'clock, and I was on a football pitch, of course, with my children, and within 3 hours, all the CIOs were in the meeting room in The Hague, except for one CIO, because he had to make a trip from France, so he took some more hours. And that, for me, was the proof that we really could act if it was necessary. And so if you put that on the list of being a leader, I think that making a team, making it work is one thing I really would like point out. Yeah, that's for me the most important thing.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Now, this next question is a little bit broader in that, you know, you've been in the technology field for some time, as the audience themselves, and there's this idea of computing being a recognized profession on par with some of the others like accounting or law, with demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics, personal responsibility, public accountability, quality assurance, or recognized credentials. What are your feelings about that?
I'm really in favor of that. I think that craftsmanship is key. I think it's key to about every development we're facing. So, making the IT profession, something that really counts is a very important thing to do. So I really second that idea.
Now, you're a recognized leader, and as a result, you, as I mentioned earlier, you were nominated as the European CIO of the Year. You were also invited to as one of the plenary speakers at the World CIO Forum because of your reputation. And you've done a lot of speaking and traveling because of all the work. So do you have any stories you can share?
Yeah, well, I just shared one of them with you about the basis of DigiNotar, the teamwork, getting the team together within a couple of hours. Another nice story is I was a member of the European Steering Committee on Cloud Computing, and this was established by the European Commission. Was shared by the president of Estonia, Mr. Ilves. And he invited us to do one of the meetings in Estonia, in Tallinn, in the capital of Estonia. And we were invited, I think it was a winter palace of one of the former tsars. And this winter palace also had a big fridge, a refrigerator done a couple of hundred years ago. And of course, we didn't have the technology we have today. So the fridge was a big seller. And in the summer, in the winter, it was filled with ice and meat. And of course, by the end of the summer, the ice would have been gone and the meat would have been eaten. And this big ice cellar was converted into a meeting room. But of course, it was under the ground, so there were no lights, no windows, but still a very fascinating environment to have a meeting of a full day. And the fun thing was that it was the most beautiful day in Estonia for years. So when we came out of the cellar during lunchtime, we faced a very sunny day with all kinds of nice trees and flowers and stuff like that. And then we had to go back to our ice cellar to finish the meeting of that day. That's something I will never forget, I guess. Another thing was that, of course, it's very important to meet your peers, to talk to your peers. And one of the persons I really enjoyed meeting was Viva Kundra, the CIO of the Obama administration. He was a young guy. He was freshly installed, and I decided to give him a phone call. I had a meeting on the phone, and then he said, "Well, why don't you come over?" So I went to Washington. That's where I found the IT dashboard I mentioned before, and some other ideas, and we exchanged experiences and plans and ambitions. But the funny thing was that we took a plane. We flew in, I think, on a Sunday night, and next month was the first meeting, and everybody's suitcase arrived but mine. So the only thing I had left was my jeans and a sweater. And I had to visit the White House. So I had to drive around Washington on a Sunday night to try to get a suit. And I managed to get a very ill-fitting suit I never wore after that, and tried to still make a very, let's say, freshly washed impression. I don't know if I really succeeded, but we became friends, so I must have done something right. These are the things you have to go through if you're a CIO of the central government, I suppose.
We're down to our last two questions, and they're even broader than the ones that we've been asking so far. And then this question, you have quite a bit of freedom in that you choose the topic area, and then you discuss what you see as some of the top challenges facing us today, and you also discuss if you have any solutions.
Okay. Well, for me, number one is privacy. I think we are still acting on old concepts. We haven't invented any new ones yet. I see that we're struggling with this all over the place. And I think that this is something we really should start working on. Why not, for example, decide what you do with your personal data yourself? So get the opportunity to sell your data if necessary, to be able to decide yourself what an app can do with the information you provide. But privacy is one of the big challenges of this era, as far as I'm concerned. Then another one is dealing with change. We're speeding up and speeding up and speeding up. At the same time, we need to think about how good are we are in deploying all these changes. How can we manage them? How can we deal with them? And I think that it's important to get a grip on the speed in which things are happening at the moment. And it's something that the moment I pronounce this, that you can't get a grip on, because it's almost an anonymous process. But that's something we really need to deal with. For example, the educational system. I see my kids wrestling with them. I see that they go to school. School hasn't changed the last couple of years. And they do what they have to do, but they don't learn at school. They learn at YouTube. They learn at the Khan Academy, for example. They learn from their peers. Still, they do the things they need to do because school asks them to do. That's coping with the change. Another thing is media rule the public debate. We hardly take time to bring in the nuance. We build opinions very fast, and we make big decisions based on very fast opinions. I think we need to find a way to get that right, to find a new balance between the information we get and decisions we build on top of them. Maybe that is even something that you're more sensitive of if you work in the public sector. But that's something that's for me that's a challenge. So if you would ask me, would wake me up in the middle of the night and say, what are the three challenges you're dealing with, you're trying to cope with, and it's privacy, it's change, and it's media and rule the world.
So those are some great viewpoints that you provided, and thank you for that. Now we're down to our last question, and we're going to turn the tables, and that is, if you're conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Okay, Stephen. Thank you for that opportunity. Well, I hope you don't mind me mentioning the fact that you did an opening statement in a forum discussion at the conference you just mentioned. What you did was summarizing all all the data that symbolize the enormous growth we're going through. My question to you is, how do you value all those figures? What's, in your opinion, the big movement behind them?
I see. You've turned the tables on me. What happens is that I feel that we're in a position of exponential change, which has never occurred in the history of this planet. And as a result, that exponential change is going to result in major disruption. And when I mean by major disruption, I think that 80% of companies will fail. 80% or more jobs will disappear. And I'm not talking 20 years. I'm talking within the next 5 to 10 years. And especially with the advent of artificial intelligence and this thing called deep learning and deep neural nets and the impact that's going to have and all the research that's going into these areas, including neuromorphic computing. So I think that's going to drive all of the changes that are occurring. And one of the things that occurred at the United Nations Global Government Summit, where there were ministers from various countries represented, I talked to some of those ministers or some of the senior government officials, and I said, you're going to have to start developing some policy around this, because it's kind of like a tidal wave that will totally change how we as a society function, but also we as individuals. And there should be some sort of planning for this because of the massive change that's going to occur, driven by technology, but the technology of which we may not even be able to predict all the consequences. So there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences. So I would say it's this kind of exponential change is underlying or being the foundational aspect of all of these things that we're talking about. You know, the massive amounts of data that's out there, which is, I guess, now 4 zettabytes and is doubling over 18 months, or the 7 billion mobile subscriptions, or, you know, the fact that all of this content is being driven by mobile technologies, and, you know, there's going to be all of these wearable technologies that are out there collecting so much data. And then this is related to big data and all the artificial intelligence tools that are being used to mine that big data. So I think all of this is coming together and creating this tidal wave of change. And I give it a name. I call it a digital quake, and because it's going to be so massive. And it's going to affect every aspect of and every segment of the world today. So that's kind of my generalized answer to your question.
No, thank you very much, because what you did now at the same time is make a perfect, you also told us what happened in this conference in Xi'an, because this was the story that was really brought up by all the speakers, if you add them together. And while you mentioned this, I'm very happy with the themes I just brought on the table, because I think it's still the things we need to work on the next couple of years. But I have a second question for you, since we turned the tables. I like to see myself as a very positive person. I always look for solutions and opportunities. Really, that's how I look at myself. So, but at the same time, now and then, I find myself being a bit worried about the coming years. I wouldn't, I'm not skeptical, but worried. Now, my question to you is, what do you think? Is it a wise thing to be a bit careful, or is it a sign that I'm losing it?
I see. To be careful in terms of the changes and sort of anticipating risk and maybe taking advantage of sort of the innovations that are out there? Is that what you're sort of leaning or leading towards?
Yeah, that's right. That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. I came across this thing called the Innovator's DNA, and I think it came out of research from Brigham Young and Harvard, but they've came up with these five qualities that make for disruptive innovation, and those five qualities are questioning, observing, experimenting, associating, and networking. And in their research, they found that all disruptive innovators possess these five qualities, and I'm talking people like Steve Jobs or Stephen Hawking or Bill Gates or any number, or Elon Musk or any number of other sort of major innovators. And if you break it down, the question is always being curious about things that are happening around you. So constantly being sort of inquisitive. So that's the questioning part. The observing part is watching all the things that are around you, looking for indicators of change and kind of incorporating it into the things that you're doing. So that's the question, observing, experimenting, trying different things, not being afraid of taking the risk of experimenting and trying and learning from things that don't work and driving lessons from it. So that's the question, observing, experimenting. And then associating is taking different pieces of information all around you. Kind of this old idea of Bloom's taxonomy of knowledge, comprehension, application, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. This is the older definition of Bloom's taxonomy, but there's this idea of synthesis of taking different pieces of information from different contexts and saying, hey, how do they blend together and how do they align with one another and how can I associate these different pieces of information? Well, actually making an effort to do that, associating different parts or different domains that you see around you to see where there's alignment and learning from it. And the last aspect is networking. Networking meaning looking at the relationships, mining the relationships, actively trying to form relationships like we're doing on this interview. We're forming and increasing the relationship that you and I have. So individuals have to be prepared for this digital quake that's coming where change is exponential. And how do they do that is by embracing some of these qualities that I just mentioned and much more, and not being afraid of taking risk and embracing risk and experimenting and trying and exploring. So that would be my answer to your question.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And then that brings me to my last question. And that has to do with, let's say, the positive side of me. When I went home after visiting China, I had the feeling that more than I had before my trip, that the issues we face are our shared issues. That the change that you just described so beautifully is a change we all are going through. So how viable is it to bring together a group of people in the world to share all these issues, to work on views on those issues, and to see how we can formulate next steps without entering the field of policy, of politics, I should say. Is that something that could work? Is that something that we could work on?
You know, one of the things that I do is I chair this thing called the Global Industry Council, and one of our council members is the founder of all the research labs of one of the largest service companies. And he talked about this aspect that change is going to be really crowdsourced in the future. And everything is going to be crowd driven. So what that means is that organizational boundaries are going to disappear. Geographical boundaries are going to disappear. So that's going to underwrite everything that's happening today. And you're seeing with cryptocurrency, you're seeing with things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, where, you know, it's all driven from the ground up. So this coming together, sharing of ideas, anticipating change, working together to drive innovation, but from the grassroots is really the tendency today, and that tendency is just going to increase. It's not going to decrease, and that's why you're even seeing even governments now kind of working to you know, bring or aggregate the, to the crowd, because of this sort of grassroots driven, movement that's taken over the world and probably driven by the internet and this sort of planetary internet of things, which is like a planetary nervous system. And the fact that there's so many automated tools using, machine learning and those kinds of technology. So, this is just going to, this is the sea change of everything, being driven from individuals and individuals having so much power in essence to, change and to move where the world is going to go and drive its direction. And it's an exciting time.
Well, thank you. So what you say is it's already there. And what I, Martin, needs to do is to look over politics, because that's of course what happens to you when you work in government. You get very sensitive about all kinds of political issues. And in the discussion you just mentioned about the European Cloud Steering Committee, you see that politics are very important. Politics on the level of what country is going to do what, and also politics on the level of, wait a minute, are we talking about European vendors or vendors from the rest of the world? So that's also kind of the reality you just explained.
Well, it's interesting how you did the three questions, because normally I get you to ask yourself the questions.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay.
So out of the 1,000+ interviews I've done over the last 25 years, you're the first one to do that.
Well, I'm sorry about that. Well, if you decide to skip this entire interview, then of course I can understand that.
No, it was a lot of fun. Well, Martin, I know your schedule is really demanding. As I mentioned, you're just one of the leading lights in the CIO arena worldwide. So we are very fortunate to have you come in and do this interview and share so much of your insights and wisdom with the audience.
Thank you very much.
I'm Stephen Abaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Martin Hillenot, internationally renowned ICT executive. Martin is a past CIO of the Central Dutch Government and past Director of the Central Government IT Policy Department and Ministry of the Interior and Kingdom Relations.